I'm not hearing anything. Are you hearing anything?
Yes, I am. Are you worried about the copyright? Because you already started the...
Yeah, okay. But I don't hear it, right?
It's hard to hear you with that running.
But I am coming through, right? I don't know why I couldn't hear it. It was crazy.
So. Yeah, I don't either. But yes, it was coming through.
All right, well, we'll just go right into our call here. All right, okay. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, April 10th, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. You can also support us by purchasing the books, Government by Consent and Court Access in the Common Law. You can find them also on the right-hand side of our website. Also, join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. You can find that on our front page or the right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week on the reading of our scriptures.
John, I can't hear if you're running it.
You're not hearing it?
No, we're not hearing it.
So we weren't getting anything, huh?
No, I didn't either, John.
All right, let me see if I missed hitting that button. I don't know why. It should be going through. Everything looks good here on this end.
Gremlins.
And let's see if we'll continue again. Let's see what happens. Let me know if you hear it. I'm going to click it now. Anything coming through?
No, sir.
Okay, well, we'll skip that, I guess. We'll just pick it up from there. All right, we'll go right into an open forum. I think the recording is continued. Hang on. Okay, it was
you
on.
You could read it, John.
Excuse me?
You could read it.
I guess I can. This is Ephesians chapter 4. I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation wherewith ye are called, with all lowliness and meekness, with long-suffering, forbearing one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body, one Spirit, even as you are called in one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all, and through all, and in you all. But unto every one of us is given grace according to the measures of the gift of Christ. Wherefore he saith, when he ascendeth up on high, he led captivity captive, and gave gifts unto men. Now that he ascended, what is it but that he also descended first into the lower parts of the earth? He that descended is the same also that ascended up far above all heavens, that he might fill all things. And he gave some apostles, some prophets, and some evangelists, and some pastors and teachers, for the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come in the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, unto perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, that we henceforth be no more children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men and the cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive, but speaking the truth in love, may grow up unto him in all things, which is the head, even Christ, from whom the whole body fitly joined together and compacted by that which is every joint supplieth, according to the effectual work in the measure of every part, maketh increase of the body unto the edifying of itself in love. This I say therefore, and testify in the Lord, that ye henceforth walk not as the Gentiles walk, in the vanity of their mind, having the understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them because of the blindness of their hearts, who being past feeling have given themselves over unto lasciviousness to work all uncleanness with greediness. But ye have not so learned Christ. If so be that ye have heard and have been renewed in the spirit of your mind, and ye put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness. Wherefore, putting away lying, speak every man truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one of another. Be ye angry, and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place to the devil. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the things which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. Let no corrupt communications proceedeth out of thy mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers. And grieve not the Holy Spirit of God, whereby ye are sealed unto the day of redemption. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speak and be put away from you with all malice. And be ye kind one to another, tender hearted, forgiving one another, even as God, for Christ's sake, hath forgiven you. Okay, that was Ephesians 4. All right, Jen, do we have any questions or any announcements to be made?
We have several questions tonight, John.
All righty.
The first one, I'm assuming it's regarding a COS, but it does not say that. It says, regarding having a treasurer. In passing the hat, is this a loose acknowledgement of covering expenses and keeping record only of that, or is there a requirement to do a DBA or some type of organizational filing?
Right. Yeah, there's no need to do a DBA. There's no need to do an INC. There's no need to report anything. You know, we shouldn't be having to do that anyway, but I know I don't do that. But if you want, you can create a trust. It's not necessary, though. It's just we, the people, coming together and having government by consent, and we don't need to form in any special way to do that. You could pass a can around every meeting, and of course the treasurer should make the announcement of the amount collected every time you come together, and keep track of that, and that should be reported at the end, at some point in time during the meeting. As the meeting goes forward, it's one of the things that need to be reported. And you'll learn how to run meetings where, you know, all the different subcommittees come together and give a couple-of-minute report on what they're doing, where they're at, and what their plan is to do next, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there'll be numerous subcommittees. And then, of course, you come together as a regular meeting and discuss different issues, maybe specifics, whatever it is that the business is at hand and what it is that you're doing together as a group. Maybe it's the political season. You'll be discussing that, maybe interviewing different individuals. You probably have extra meetings during that time period during the elections in order to accommodate people who want to run for office and are looking for your support. I would strongly suggest anybody that's running for office that you're going to support that you require that they come out to National Liberty Alliance and take our courses. I think, you know, the most in-depth and the most powerful course, in my opinion, is the live course we have going now, which also will teach people how to come into, you know, how to go into the courts and deal in the courts. So that probably is the course you want to push them for. But we'll think about that because we do have numerous courses. We have courses that, you know, have tests to them so they can prove that they have taken the course. But you would know whether they've taken the course or not. Well, the one course that I just spoken about, the live course, is probably going to be too long to require them to do that. It's going to take quite some time, but maybe they'll do it anyway on their own as life goes on. But anyway, we do have numerous courses, and we'll have to think about which ones we might want to require them to do. I haven't given much thought on that, but you know, we have the foundation study. We have the Constitutional Course 101, and probably that is one for sure that needs to be taken. There's the Civics Course, Government by Consent Course, and maybe the Government by Consent Course is probably the key course. It's a little bit long, but it has tests to it, so when they come in to take that course, you know, it is recorded, and, you know, we could know that they took the course. But you can also find out by asking these people questions. The key thing, of course, is that if you're going to help someone to become elected, they need to understand the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and, of course, the Declaration of Independence. They need to have read through that and have an appreciation for that. But they also should understand the common law. So right now, off the top of my head, I would think that the Government by Consent course is probably the best course for them to take. And that you can find here. I'm showing it on the desktop right now. So, okay. I guess that's about it.
Okay, does NLA have bylaws? If so, where can I find them?
No, we don't have any bylaws or anything, and we want to think about the rules. We don't want to make too many rules. Each individual group might want to make some rules, but I wouldn't get too lost on those rules. You know, just when you come together, you have a chairman who, you know, runs, keeps things in order. Make sure everybody gets a chance to speak. Some of the things we've written up, I believe, it's been a while since I've written them up, so I'll have to take a look to see, but we have the handbooks. Some of the things, of course, you know, you don't want to make it difficult to change a chairman. You should be able to change a chairman at any given time by popular vote. And remember, a chairman is only an individual that really just keeps the meeting moving along and makes sure everybody gets a chance to talk and pass the mic around and that kind of thing. This is also a co-chair. Sometimes when different counties are coming together to meet, maybe to take interviews on individuals that are going to represent them, and for instance, your congressman will probably... will cross different counties, and we laid that out in the committee man handbook, which is what the Committee of Safety is. Everyone is a committee man, and we did lay out the process and procedure. We did copy the same process and procedures that the committee men that are actually. Well, they claim to be elected, but they're not even really elected. They just appear to be elected. But anyway, they're controlled statutorily. The way that they operated their meetings, the way they met in different fashions, sometimes, of course, crossing county can, because, you know, if you're going to interview an individual, you know, then you're going to want to come together with the other counties that are going to be working with you to interview the same individual that's representing both, and then have you certain requirements that you're expecting them to do. I'm going to make a list of different things that we need to think about, and maybe, of course, work in one accord, as long as you agree with it, county to county, everybody's got to agree with it, or whatever they want to do. But there are certain issues that we have to figure out how we're going to deal with, or certain requirements that we're going to want, for instance, our representatives in Washington to be working on. I could think of a lot of issues that they need to be thinking about and they need to be correcting. So I'll start off with something soon, eventually, and write a paper on some things. Other people can do the same thing, and then each, again, every committee of safety is free and independent, and they need to figure out what they want to do or what they want to support and so on and so forth. But I would imagine more often than not we'll be working in one accord, because we're all looking for the same thing. We want obedience to the Constitution by these people, and we want these people to do certain business, take care of certain business that they haven't been taken care of. You know, one of the things I can think of, or just offhand, is corporations. I'm finding it very difficult with people that I do business with, you know, whatever it is that I might purchase or something, and they don't answer their phones, and they keep pushing you out to a website or something. If someone's going to take my money, I want to be able to talk to them on the phone if I have a problem. I don't want to be trying to figure out how to find these people or get them to respond, typing a message on a website or something. But that's an issue I think is important. I've noticed that many times I make different phone calls with even medical services, you know. Like today I made a call for medical services and I was call number 40. What's that all about? You know, go hire some more people. You know, this is something that Congress needs to control, because we need to have contact with the people we're giving our money to that's given us a service. And that is part of the powers and authorities of Congress, is to control certain commercial activities. So anyway, things like that, there's a lot of different things that we're going to want to focus in on: educational things, political things, judicial things, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay.
Are there restrictions for elected political leaders and government employees?
Yeah, I can't think of anything that would be a restriction. I'm not sure I understand that particular question. I don't know. I don't understand the question.
Well, it's hard to tell whether they were talking about to be a member of NLA or to be a member of a COS.
Oh, no, there's no restriction. Anybody can join. And you should never, you know, reject anyone. Sometimes people could be annoying or something. You kind of live with it and deal with it and correct the person if necessary. But you don't want to deny anyone from coming in to become part of the Committee of Safety.
But
that's what they were talking about. So.
You don't want them to sit on the as a chair person, correct?
Well, sometimes people can be a problem, and if the group feels, then they wouldn't elect them to the chair. I did talk to someone recently about a situation, and that's kind of the thing. You know, someone who is problematic, you don't want to have them in a position of a chair. Sometimes they're egotistical people who just want that position. And that's why we have to make it very easy to change the chair anytime. If there's a problem, an individual is a problem, you know, you can vote them out and put someone else into that chair. And again, you know, someone sitting in a chair just doesn't, you know, that's either the chairman or the co-chairman. And you have the secretary, of course, also, and the treasurer. None of these people have anything extra or more power, authority, or more of a vote than anyone else. We're all equal. And that's how you have to deal with things. We're all equal. You know, Congress has polluted that whole system. And even in the committeemen, I was in the committeemen a couple of times, and they polluted that system too. And they have party bosses, and you can't get rid of the party bosses. After all, they control everything. And these are the problems we want to avoid. So, But that's up to the people. They should be able to avoid it pretty easily. They just make the decision and do what has to be done. But, next question.
Yeah, I can answer this one. It says, I see that it says NLA has 1,681 members. How accurate is this, and how often is this information updated?
Well, that number is off. We have almost 11,000.
Well, 10,681.
Right, that's what we have.
That information is updated whenever anyone signs up. That number is different from the number of emails that go out every week by 62 for some reason, and we do not know why. Next question. Through my research, I learned that in order to do a quo warranto, that one then needs to be prepared to take that position of the judicial official. I never heard you mention this. Can you please explain?
What was the last part of that? Read that again, the last part.
Well, if you do a quo warranto, that you then need to be prepared to take that position of the judicial official. I never heard you mention this.
No, I never mentioned anything like that. No, if you do a quo warranto, first of all, doing a quo warranto, it's a writ quo warranto. It's a paper that works within the court, inside the court. And so if you have a problem with a judge particularly, you could do a writ quo warranto on them in the middle of the process of the court. And, of course, that offers the opportunity by law and in law to remove that person if they don't respond to that quo warranto. They have 10 days to respond. Of course, if they're responding and they need more time because whatever reason, we should offer that more time to them. But not that you would seize the seat, but the bottom line is that the judge is removed maybe at some point and another judge is going to take that seat. And that is done by law. There is an enforcement process for that, and it's part of the court process and procedures. Now, outside of the court, you know, you're dealing with, let's say, some board of directors, let's say the school board, and these people are elected, and you serve a quo warranto on those individuals. It wouldn't be a quo warranto, it would be what's called notice and demand. And it's the same thing in a sense that it requires them to give you to produce their oath, their bond, and their financials. And again, if they refuse to do it, and within 10 days, they can be removed from their position because it's a requirement. I was listening to the Anti-Federalist Papers today, and I think it was number 10 that talked a little bit about this, and they called it a freehold, I think. I know I've heard that phrase before, but I haven't had time to go look it up. But they called it a freehold and talked about anybody that was getting into an elected position, that would be their bond, okay, a freehold or something was called. And it could be a piece of land. They require so many acres of land to put up or so many dollars to put up or something else of value to serve as a bond. But any elected office, the individual has to have a bond. And also any appointed office where they take the oath, they also have to have a bond. But no, we don't take their position. I never spoke about that, and I'm not knowledgeable of that kind of a thing happening at all. Next.
Okay. As to the writ of mandamus that NLA sent February 2023 to the U.S. Supreme Court clerk, how long was NLA expecting a response, and has there been one? And if not, what is Plan B?
Well, we did get. Matter of fact, they returned it not too long ago, and it was all done by a clerk, which is a doorkeeper, and we'll be writing a paper for them right now, a writ quo warranto on that individual, demanding on why they had done that, by what authority they think they could do that, and also demanding their oath, their bonds, and their financials. So I've got that paper here, but I just haven't had time yet to write the paper and get it in yet, but we'll be filing that soon. Next.
Okay. I went to a religious television show as an extra and was not able to partake in the filming unless I wore a mask and took a PCR test. I refused and requested a religious exemption. They let me know that since it was a Screen Actors Guild union production, they cannot allow me in and cannot provide me with a religious exemption on a religious TV show. Please note that none of the extras are part of the union. I documented the entire event on video, and I sent in an affidavit describing how I was discriminated against to SAG/AFTRA, Screen Actors Guild, American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. Is this the right approach in that the union has to abide by the Civil Rights Act of 1964, or can the union just make up whatever they want since they are a union?
Yeah, I don't really have any knowledge of that. I don't think you can really press the issue on them. I'm not too sure. I do know that if you were denied service for health purposes, for instance, let's say you had emphysema or something, and so that brings you to a point that you have a little bit of difficulty breathing. And some people just can't tolerate a mask. But particularly if you have a medical problem and you just can't tolerate the mask, such as I mentioned, emphysema or something like that, and then you were rejected services, they refused to service you, then you could sue them because they cannot deny an individual service for health reasons, or it would be, there's another word for it, but basically they can't deny you because that would, we'd call it a handicap, I guess, to some degree. You could figure that out as a handicap. And for that reason, you could sue them. But I wouldn't go too much on those things, especially any other place, you know. Remember, people do have a right to deny serving you. Unless, again, there's a problem with, you know, that they're doing it because of you have a health problem, a handicap, or whatever. So.
That was the last question, John. We're done.
Right. Do we have any announcements?
No, not this evening.
Okay. All right. I updated another page over the weekend here. I spoke about this a couple of times, and I believe I brought it up last week. This page under today's issues is called Anarchy USA. And again, if you haven't seen these videos, you should really go out to see these videos because it's going to put everything into perspective, exactly what they've been doing and how they did it and how they were planning to take over the entire world. When you put this whole thing together, it really makes a lot of sense. I also wrote some stuff down here, and particularly about the Democratic Party and the American Bar Association, which is both of their purposes was to destroy the union. One was to turn us into a democracy, and the other one, of course, was to turn to get rid of this common law and turn us into our courts into civil law. And they accomplished that. As long as the people believe in their minds that we're a democracy, then they accomplished their goals. You know, they haven't changed this to a democracy in a specific, critical way, officially, let's say. But the minds of the people believe we're a democracy. And that's why they can argue and debate, our different rights, for instance, the First Amendment and the Second Amendment, and many others. There's a big thing going on in the court that I'm studying right now. An issue came up in a case. And I'll probably be talking about it on the course at some point, where there is what's called the Bevin's doctrine, or Bevin's case anyway. And then where the Bevin's case, it laid out the permission to sue individuals that work for the government that injured you. Now, there's a couple of cases out there, and all of a sudden they're making certain qualification requirements in order for that to take place, or restricting certain things. Now, I don't know enough about it, but this is what I heard, and I don't know if that's exactly how it works. So there was something also that was in effect that had something to do with the border. Again, I haven't read through the cases. There's a few cases involved that I got to read through, and then there's the Bevin's case, or I guess that's how they pronounce it, Bevin's. I need to read through that too. So those are problematic things, but anyway. Going back here to to this ABA and the Democratic Party. You know, the Democratic Party is the oldest political party. It started, it was created or founded in 1801. Okay, before that, it was the Federalists. Now, the Federalists and the Federalist movement, you know, Jefferson spoke about this, and he said, we're all Federalists because we all believe that we need to come together and create a federal government and give them certain powers, and then the states have, of course, their own powers. But certain things, you know, it was agreed upon that the federal government would take care of and take issue to. But the enemy was already in the gate. And if you haven't, I don't know if people have looked into the Federalist Papers, and specifically, you know, I've looked into it quite a few times, and I'm still looking through that. I'm still learning a lot more from the Federalist Papers, but also the Anti-Federalist Papers. And in the Anti-Federalist Papers, you know, the main purpose of the Anti-Federalist Papers was to deal with the enemy in the gate already. Because there were certain things that the Constitution said, or shall I say the way it said it, that needed correction. And the big thing was Jefferson and Madison came together realizing that, hey, we have to have a Bill of Rights because this is what's going to protect us. And it'll restrict and restrain our government also. We put it down on paper, and these are our rights that are unalienable. They can't be taken away, and that's it. As a matter of fact, America, if it wasn't for the Bill of Rights, America would not be here today. We would have been lost a long time ago. It's the Bill of Rights that have prevented these people from completely destroying us. So, I mean, we were very close to losing it all. But thank God things took a different event, went a different direction. But again, the Bill of Rights is what has really saved this nation for the couple of hundred plus years that we've been around. And that pretty much was the purpose of the Anti-Federalist Papers, and corrected a lot of things. What people don't realize, and matter of fact, a lot of these things in here, that Anarchy USA that I'm talking about, in these videos to be watched, you know, they're some powerful, powerful videos, and especially when you get into Uncle Tom documentary, and there's also a number two documentary. Really powerful. I suggest that you watch the former video first, Anarchy USA first. That is this first video here. But it was the Democratic Party that has kept slavery alive. It's the Democratic Party that has kept the black people victims. And that's what you're going to learn here, and how they've turned people against people, in this case black against white. And it was the Republican Party. The Republican Party was formed in about 1860 or 1861, so in the beginning of the 1860s, or maybe the very end of the years before that. The Republican Party was formed, and the main purpose they were coming together for was to defend the black people, to free the slaves. And Lincoln became the first Republican president, but that was their main platform. Was to give the rights that all men are created equal. And what came out of that eventually, of course, was the freedom of the slaves. And there was a big problem with this, and that's when the 13th and the 14th Amendment was written, and that's when the Jim Crow laws came about. And the Jim Crow laws came out of the Democratic Party. And then, of course, you know, well, you go through all these things. It really lays all this out, and it's important for us as Americans to understand these issues and to understand the problems, understand how we got here, and hopefully for people that are black, that they come to see the truth and realize that it's the Republican. We believe in the law. It's the Republican. We believe that all men are created equal. That's an unalienable right. I mean, that's first and foremost. All men are created equal. We all have equal rights. But it's a Democratic Party. The sole purpose was to divide. That's why political parties were created, to divide this nation, to keep slavery alive, at least in the minds of people, and to keep that friction between two different groups alive. And that permitted them to control a lot. And once they controlled the black population, there was a pretty large voting block that they've seized control of. And but they're waking up. I mean, I'm telling you, I was blown away. I just watched this over the weekend. I heard about this, and I looked into it. Uncle Tom documentary. What a powerful, powerful documentary. If you haven't listened to this, seen this documentary, you really need to see it. The second one I got about halfway through, and I ran out of time. I have to get to finish it. But powerful, powerful things definitely will empower anybody of color that watches these things. They'll come to understand what's really going on, and they will be empowered by this, really empowered. You know, I made a note here, and they've made notes inside these videos also, that people that come to this country and they were born somewhere else and raised somewhere else, and they came here for liberty, for freedom, and we're talking about people who are black, and they've come into this nation, and they have not been held back, and they have been successful because they haven't been carrying any baggage. And the Democratic Party has made sure that they make sure that these people continue to carry that baggage, because that's how they can control them and get their vote. And there's a lot of people that have stood up on this particular documentaries, gave some powerful, powerful testimonies, and who are very successful in business. It's just powerful. You got to watch it. But Anarchy USA, it really goes back into, I think, the 30s and the 40s with the movement of communism around the world, and eventually came to the United States. And the whole thing was the black and white issue. That's how they divided us as a nation. That's how they created problems in this nation. But they did the same thing in other places, and maybe in different kinds of factions between one to another. They create the problem. They bring it to a point where people just can't live under it no more, and then they come with the solution and bring them into captivity, and it's over. And we were very close to that. And again, like I said, thank God we've been able to avoid that, and we've taken a different direction, only but by the grace of God. Also, I put in here slavery in America because I thought it was important for people to understand what our founding fathers' real true position was on slavery. And it was only a couple of states that maintained the slavery and made a big thing, and that's why they had to make a, you know, get together some kind of an agreement. They came up with this three-fifths of a man. But they did know, founding fathers did have a plan that eventually this would be taken. Jefferson had spoke about this on a couple of occasions, that eventually the slaves would be free. But it was going to take some time, and it took a war to do that. It took a civil war. And Lincoln was the guy who felt that it was his time. It was for him to do. And a very interesting thing. And we cover that information in here and about Lincoln, what Abraham Lincoln said about the founders and slavery. Very powerful. I'm spending a lot of time on this page talking about this because I really think, as people have a little time to watch videos, go watch these videos. We all should know about these things, all of us. And, you know, quite a few of these videos is from Griffin, G. Edward Griffin. And here's the second one. This is a two-hour one, extremely powerful. Every one of these videos is extremely powerful, just extremely powerful. So, again, you get a chance, go through this page and read it and watch the videos. I think it's a real eye-opener. Okay, with that, I guess we'll go to an open forum. Anybody wants to get into the queue, if you're on a phone, it's a *6 and 1. Any kind of an app, there should be a button to enter into the queue. So let me see if I can get over there. Okay, we'll take our first question, caller. Okay, someone has been 405 area code. What's your first name? And your state looks like you're from Oklahoma.
Hello. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. What's your first name?
Okay. My name's Laura.
Laura from Oklahoma, right?
Yes, sir.
Go right ahead.
Yeah. I hadn't heard anybody talk about this, and I'm kind of curious. What's the best way to go about figuring what type of damages that I ought to claim on a case?
What kind of damages? What?
Okay, it would be okay. I won't go into the whole thing right now, or I'd take up your whole hour. But a local bank did a whole bunch of illegal stuff. And then they hired people to go and strip property out of my dad's house, and it's a bad deal. They did it after he passed away. So anyway, they stole stuff out of my place. They, you know what I mean? It's a lot of stuff.
I don't understand. A bank stole something, is you saying?
Yes, they filed foreclosure.
They did a foreclosure, and they took the things out of the house.
Other stuff. And then whenever the guy came out there to the house, I told him he couldn't access the property unless he had a something from the court. I can't remember what it's called right now. You know, they're supposed to go and get something that says I need to leave the property. Anyway, because that...
Did you call the sheriff? Because that was your solution to the problem, unless the sheriff had a warrant.
And took all of my dad's property, and they took it out of one of our properties on my staff. And I think that's
pretty much... But, you know, you're falling away. You're falling away.
Anyway, it's a long step.
Okay, well, hold on a minute. Hold on a minute. So let me see if... Hold on. Hello?
And got killed out here right in front of my house. But they did a whole lineup of illegal stuff.
I don't understand anything you're saying there. I had to mute you for a minute or so I can get your attention. You're breaking up and then you're coming very, very low, and I can't understand. But I got the gist of what you're talking about. It seems that they came and did a foreclosure on your father's house, and you wanted to know what you could do about it, I guess. And they've taken property that I guess was in the house when they came to took ownership of the house, and so on. In order for them to finalize the seizure, they do have to have a sheriff. But if the house is abandoned, then they'll just walk in and do what they have to do and make a claim. It takes a couple of years, or at least a year, for them to actually make the change of the ownership of the house if they don't get cooperation from the individuals whose house it is. So, but the only thing I could tell you on this is that if you want to deal with this problem and you want to take care of it yourself without a lawyer, you need to get into the course or find some place where you could take a course to understand how the court system works and to go in and take care of your own business. And, of course, we here at National Liberty Alliance offer that course. You can find that under Education Starts Here and Court Access and Common Law. You click on that link there and you read this page and you'll be able to get into the course. So that's the best I can tell you. It sounds like you don't have too much of an understanding of how things work. So any advice I give you, you're still going to need more information, and you're going to need, you know, how to deal with that advice I give you, and then also what to do next. So, you know, either you have to hire a lawyer, which is not a good thing to do these days, or you have to learn the law yourself and take care of it. And you know, we offer that possibility here. So that's it. Let me unmute you here again, and let's see if we can hear you or understand you now. Get a little closer to your mic, because we were fading away pretty bad. Hello? Are you still there? You still there? All right. Last call for you, because I'm not hearing anything. Okay, we'll take our next person. Asulu, you got the mic, and you're from Missouri, I believe, right?
Yes.
Go right ahead.
Yes, I do have a question. You know, we have an automotive business, and we're trying to... file a mechanical lien. Do you have anything on that in your site?
Well, a mechanics lien is pretty easy to file, but you have to be very careful. You can get that information you can Google that or use whatever kind of a search engine you want to find information on. Just put mechanics lien and you'll come up with some stuff. Laws on mechanics lien might be different from state to state. For instance, in New York here, if New York here, there's a couple of things you need to do. You can, when you lien something, I think, and you do a mechanics lien, that's done without a court order. An individual is owed money. Let's say like a contractor. I've leaned to people before as a contractor, and you can lien for the materials that you have on that site. I don't think you can lien for the labor. I don't remember, and it may be different in different states. But you can lien the property, and once you put a lien on that property and you register with the county, it then gets attached to the home. And, you know, they're going to have a problem trying to get a loan or trying to sell or whatever it is they need or want to do with that home, with that property. And now a mechanic's lien is only good for, in New York here anyway, it's only good for 8 months. But you can renew it numerous times. You can renew it. And, you know, even if you get a court lien, you know, if you go to get a court order and get a lien, I believe those liens are only good for 10 years, but you can renew those liens too. So now again, your state is different, but you have to be very careful because, you know, you have to follow the specifics on what you can lien for. But again, it's a special kind of a lien, a mechanic's lien. It's not something that anybody could just go lien. What's the situation that you're thinking to go lien something?
Oh, it was a vehicle, but it was the labor is behind on that. They didn't want to. It's been the car has been in the shop since November 2022, and
liens are put on liens are put on a vehicle when you buy it. If you owed money, you know, when they do the loan, it's attached. It's an agreed upon thing. But the mechanics lien really, again, works with mechanics. Anybody who's doing some kind of mechanical work on a piece of property, a car or a house or whatever. You can, those are the kind of things you could put a mechanics lien on. And again, you have to read the laws because if I recall, I think it's just on the materials. I don't think you can lien for the labor, only the materials, I think. Again, and each state might be a little different, so you'd have to go look it up.
Okay. I got one more question. What would be a best way to get a EIN or LLC for a business?
Well, a couple of things. You could do a DBA that's local. You go down to the county clerk, and you could do a DBA there, and it's a doing business as, and then you can then file for an EIN number and then run your business however you want. Of course, the other way is you can incorporate. It's pretty, it helps. It really protects you incorporating. So you become a fiction. One of the problems, though, if you incorporate, is that if you run into a situation and you need to go into the courts for something, fictions require a lawyer to represent them. So you have to hire a lawyer in order to do that. So I would be very careful with that. But a remedy for that is to do a DBA, and once you're a DBA, it's not a corporation, so it's not a fiction. You're doing business as a name, and that you do in the county. And there's some protection there, too, but you are kind of open to being personally sued, maybe in a situation, in opposed to where if you have a corporation, they have to sue the corporation and not you. So... Yeah, it's got a good side on one and a good side and a bad side and a good side on the other one and a bad side. So however you want to do it.
So you think it would be better to do the DBA?
I personally, I've always gone with the corporations, but I also have done DBAs. And I was in a court one time and they were trying to, the other side, and I was representing myself. And the other side was making the argument that I couldn't be here, that I had to get someone else. And I said, no, I'm a DBA. I don't have to be here. I can represent, my business because I am the business owner. And of course, that went through. The judge agreed with that and went through. And it was probably one of the very few cases. I had no knowledge of law back in those days. I had some basic I had knowledge of construction law. That with that knowledge, I was able to go into the court because that's the contract, in construction. Uh-huh. And I understood contracts, I used the AIA standard contracts. But in any event, you go in and you represent yourself. And in that particular case, I won, and I won very quickly. So Very rarely do you get a judge that's really honorable and upholds justice. I suggest DBAs. And it's, you know, we're coming into a time when it's not all that important. You know, and again, the other thing with corporations is it protects you against the government too, to a degree. It sort of gets you behind the corporation from dealing with the IRS. Again, that can get a little complex dealing with those problems. So. But the IRS is going to be gone soon anyway, and
Okay. I got one more thing though. I was trying to get on the site where I can take the recorded course, because we work on Saturday sometime and I'm not able to.
Right. There's a lot of people that are taking the course and aren't coming into it live. They come to it when they want to come into it, and so you can take your time, or if you really need to learn, you can go quickly. We're on chapter 2 right now, and we're in pleadings right now. So it is a point where you've gone through you can go through those things quicker if you want to, and catch up with us and come to the live courses if you want. But if you can't get to the live courses, fine. You could take it. It's just as good to take it any time because it's recorded. You get exactly what everyone else gets. The only thing you don't get when it's recorded is you don't get the opportunity to ask questions. But a lot of people ask questions. You hear those questions and answers. And then you can always come here on a Monday night program to ask the questions. So still, that's kind of available to you still.
So that will be just go on the site and get on under the education and then...
Are you looking at the desktop right now? You're looking at my desktop?
No, I'm on my phone.
All right. Well, if you come to the site and you highlight education starts here, you come down to court access and the common law. You click on that. That'll give you the information and the application, and you can now pay by credit card, or you can do a check or money order. But if you did it by credit card, you'll get immediate access because you'll get an email followed up. And you'll get all the information to join us if we're still live, and access and where to find the other two pages. And the other two pages, one of them is the court access recorded videos, which comes in two other tabs that open up under court access and the common law once you come into the course, that is. People who aren't in the course don't see this. But anyway, when you click on the one which is the recorded videos, it starts from the top, introduction part A, introduction part B, and goes all the way down. So the first course is on the top of the page, and the last one we've done is on the bottom of the page. So, and we put them up here every time we have a Saturday and a session, and we then put it up here. The other thing is you have access to the table of contents, which is all of the necessary tools you need to write papers and get information, puzzle things together, and get all the different forms. You get the pleadings, we explain that, the different motions, and just going through all of that. These are tools, and once you go through the course and you understand and see the tools, because we go through the tools as we go through the course, once you get that basic understanding, then you use this to write your cases with all these tools.
I got one more thing. How do I know that they received the payment that I sent? I sent it in the money order. The first one was the check, I believe, and then the last one was the money order.
Where did you send it? You sent for what, the course?
Yes, for the course, yes. It's been a while.
Did you fill out an application?
Yes, sir.
And then you mailed it in?
I did fill out.
Okay, get in touch with Jan. Get him at jan@nationallibertyalliance.org and tell him what, and he'll try to help you. He'll find your application. If he can't find it, he'll give me a call. But
Great.
So we'll just
Thank
take it from
you.
There. Okay.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
You got it. Thank you. Okay, let's go to our next person. Let's see. That is... Oh, wait a second. It didn't move. Looks someone from Florida. What's your first name from Florida? Hey, how you doing, Angelique?
What's my first name? I'm not telling.
Angelina. We
know who you are. We're gonna play a guessing game here. Yeah.
We know your voice already. And by the way, Gerard, if you're here, I do see you in here. Let me know if you want to take the mic in a few.
Hey, check this out. Hey, check this out. You know, just when you thought you've seen everything. Huh? So how do you feel about this? You walk into a gun store. So you meet with the couple, the following about three very, very ballsy responses. Number one, for the clerk to tell you, you have the Second Amendment gives you the right to keep into their arms. It didn't say anything about you having the right to buy arms, and therefore he refuses to sell you an arm. How about a firearm? How about that?
What state are you in, and do you need a permit to get one? What's the deal?
No, you're not understanding. The clerk was being facetious. It had nothing to do with the permit.
When you say clerk, are you talking about a county clerk? They don't, you know, who are you talking about? The clerk of the store?
Store clerk.
Store clerk, yeah.
So the store clerk, how would you like the store clerk?
They can refuse to service anyone, you know, but of course there's certain things that could be problematic if they're prejudiced, and you can prove that if they're denying you and you have a certain handicap, and that could mean a health issue, that kind of thing you can sue them for. But as far as just person to person, I understand, they can deny.
If he's dictating to you that telling you what your right is, that you don't have the right to buy one, you get what I'm saying? Telling you what your right is.
Yeah, well, people don't know. People don't know many things in the case of law, it seems. But I would imagine they would know. Well, what state are you talking about?
Oh, it's in Texas. Yeah,
Texas.
It had nothing to do with state law or anything like that.
Yeah, but Texas. Does Texas require a permit to buy? Is it a handgun or a rifle? You don't need.
That was not the subject. He was just being facetious. That was not the subject about a permit or anything. He was just being discourteous.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's much you can do. Go to another store.
Oh, yeah. I do know what I can do. All right, next is this. So then, okay, I've been here now 3 years. All right, but I only still have a Florida ID, because remember, I came from Florida. That's why I still have a Florida number. Mm-hmm. All right, so how is it he's to dictate, to tell me to go buy, and I can prove I've lived here for 3 years. I have documentation. So how can he dictate to go tell me to go get a state of Texas ID?
I don't know. What you need to do is maybe you call the sheriff and ask him if there's a required law for that. And that's what you would know.
Remember, there is no law to order me to get a statutory ID if I don't want one. He cannot.
I understand. That is a problem, and I'm not sure exactly. Well, we'll have to deal with that at some point in time. With nothing we could do about it at the moment. But you know, you can go down to motor vehicles. Hold on. You can go down to motor vehicles and just get an ID. But maybe there is other places that you can get an ID. I'm not sure where
his arrogance and his presumption to give me that order is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, I wouldn't waste too much time on that person. I would just move on. You know, I really wouldn't. I mean, I don't know.
And then to turn in and tell me the lie that I'm subject to ATF, that ATF is the federal government. Now I started lecturing him to tell him why it's not. All right, so then
if they're taught this, you're not going to get anywhere with them. And, you know, there are certain requirements to buy a weapon anywhere in the sense that they do a background check, and each state has their own thing going on with that, however that works, and certain requirements for certain people that can't get a weapon for whatever reason. But a background check is one thing. And that's why they're looking for a solid ID. What ID would you offer them if you didn't have Florida?
Yeah, I still have my Florida ID.
Right.
And okay, if a person wants to suggest I get a Texas ID, okay, don't give me an order and tell me it's law, because it's not law, and I proved to him, I broke it down to him why it's not.
Yeah. Well, people are people, you know. There's only so much you could do, but you don't have to. Well, if you're going to be in that state, they're going to push the issue. Could be a problem maybe later in the future if you don't have a license in that state. I don't know how that could be a problem, but I guess it could be. But in any event, that doesn't prevent you from getting a state ID in that state and still keep your Florida license if that's what you want to do. But I do know that some states require you to give up a license if you go to another state to get a license. And maybe that's the fact in all states. I really don't know. I don't know anything about that. So.
Oh, you can be licensed in many states. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know enough to deal with him, but because he was quite arrogant, laying down the law for me, you know, I don't let things like that go. You know, I told him, let's see if his hands and his paperwork is good. His mouth can match. All right, the paperwork I'm going to send him. Well, the person is that arrogant like that with me, and furthermore, violating my right to enjoy goods and services and equal protection under the law, which I have him on too. To tell me I don't have the right to buy one.
Yeah, but I don't know that you're going to be able to get away to sue them. Again, they may be acting. Hold on. They may be acting under what they're being taught, and it could be the state teaching them that they have to have this, that, and the other thing. And if you don't have this, that, or the other thing, then you can't sell a weapon to the person.
I don't know.
I tried to explain.
Can you hear me?
I understand. Yeah, Gerard's saying it's a statute, but no. But
you're cooperating with a statutory process.
No. Hold on. But in this case, they're commercial activity. Okay. They're operating, and it is a weapon, and they have to do a background check, and they have to have ID to do a background check.
Now, you think
that is they are required by law to do that for the business.
The point I'm making is, do you think
I gave him my ID. I did give it to him. I didn't want to do
that.
Hold on a minute. Too many people. Hold on. Too many people talking. Gerard, go ahead.
If you don't have a ID that says you're a resident, like if you're in Texas, they're not going to want to license you necessarily, although some states don't matter, but you have to show all that if you're from a different state. So
she's in Texas, so you know, Texas, again, you'd have to check to see what the law is, the requirement with the for the background check, and what the requirements are of the people who are selling weapons, because again, they're controlled.
Again, what I'm saying is he tried to twist the Second Amendment to say that no one has the right to buy a weapon, and that they only have the right to own one. How can you logically own one unless you either buy a trade?
Again, that's ignorance. You know, what else
that's
can
what
I say? Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. If you hear his tone of voice, you get what I'm saying. He's just being ignorant.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, and I wouldn't even bother with it. I'd move on, that's all. Some things just aren't worth bothering with. But by the way, Gerard, do you want to take the mic in a short?
Sure. I guess if you can hear me, I have
one thing. Do you have a Coronto for corporations, or do you want us to use the one at Bond for the
women? There's the Coronto while you're in the court to apply on anybody or anything. And then, well, I don't know about a corporation, the requirement of a corporation to have an oath and bonds. There is what's called the notice and demand that you put on an individual, whether it's a corporation or whether it's a person that's working for the government. Hold on. You're not going to go after a corporation for their oath and the bonds because they don't have that.
No, I know that.
But
I know they don't have an oath.
But a notice and demand, you can get a copy of the notice and demand really is laying out, a legal paper and filing it upon that person, giving them certain time to respond because they have a duty to respond because you have some kind of business or something going on with them. So they have a duty to respond. Yeah. Then, I would do is I would take that notice and demand if they don't respond to it, then take that into the court and move for a summary judgment, which you can probably get away with maybe, but sometimes you still have to go through the whole process anyway.
Yeah, I have done several, and they always default on the one I have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I proceeded and whatever, and they just default all the way through.
Mm-hmm. All right, anything else? Because we got other people.
Yeah.
You,
Okay. No, that's good. Thank you. All right.
Okay.
Yeah, and I wouldn't push too heavy on the other thing because it's just going to aggravate you more, and you're not going to get anywhere. Just give your business somewhere else that'll deal with you. You know. So. Okay. Gerard, you want to take the mic? I'll stay in the background here.
Hey, who's next? Is it Cynthia Joe? Do you?
Yeah, just hit the. I didn't hit the next question yet, but hit that button. Careful not to hit the other one.
And of course, early night tonight.
Oh, okay. So you got Cynthia. What state are you from? Go ahead. You got it, Gerard.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha State.
Aloha State. Hey, I had emailed my question in yesterday. I don't know why it wasn't read, but I'll just read it. So I'm in your class and starting the process of getting together my exhibits and making a list of the damages done when, as a teacher here in Hawaii, I had to leave my career due to COVID-19 mandates. So just so you know, the Department of Education in Hawaii is actually run by the state. We don't have state boards. So I did a process. I sent the Department of Education when they put the memo after memo after memo in August of 2021. I had sent them a notice to rescind all COVID mandates, and that was in September. And then I gave them an affidavit restating my God-given unalienable rights, and then no answer. I stayed all in common law. I gave them a notice of default. And my question is this. Is in my affidavit, I stated that they would agree to pay $250,000 per offense where they trespassed on my God-given unalienable rights, constitutional rights, and constitutional torts, because they trespassed on my First, Fourth, Fifth, Ninth, Tenth Amendment. They had breach of contract, emotional.
Who is this against now?
It would be for the superintendent because of the.
What agency?
She's a teacher, John, and they made a COVID mandate, and they're mandating
the shot. Oh, okay. Well, this is one of your specialties.
One of the things you missed, Cynthia, is you missed the fact that if they want you to take the COVID-19 shot, the COVID shot, that's an experimental thing, and they cannot require it. It's against Nuremberg. It's against our Constitution. It's against what's the other one that they go by with the war stuff. But anyway, it's been upheld in courts worldwide that you cannot mandate experimental medical treatments. That's what Hitler did.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a big one, and they're going to lose. You forget everything else you got. That one right there. That's a human rights violation. Plus, now we know it was a kill shot.
Right.
And by you not taking it, you saved your life. But they forced you to take it. They wanted to force you to take it to keep your job. Do you realize what kind of lawsuit you have?
Yeah, let me just say I walked away. I did not comply. Yeah.
Right. As long as you – see, they want you to sign something, and then they say, oh, you're going on an involuntary furlough. Bullcrap. What kind of 1984 newspeak is that?
Okay. So, yes, I did. I walked away. Because they had threatening memos to terminate anybody who did not comply. Then when it came right down to it, they wouldn't terminate me. So like you just mentioned.
They wouldn't terminate you because they knew it wouldn't hold up in court. That's why they wouldn't terminate you.
Yes, and so they did like you just said.
This with many people.
Yes, they put me on unpaid leave. So what I'm hearing you say that as I take John's course, my biggest point is actually going to be violation against the human rights violation, which is, and that they can't force an emergency use a drug.
Right, exactly.
Experimental,
That's American law, and that's international law. It's recognized worldwide.
Okay, all right, that sounds great.
The one good thing Hitler did for us. Because it had to come out. And, and that's where Jefferson didn't think they went far enough because he wanted to make it so that, you know, he said they would force treatments on people, that people have to have autonomy of their bodies.
Right.
They already knew back then they were going to do stuff because they probably were doing it back then, too.
In common law, your first piece of property is your body.
That's
okay,
right.
Yeah, so speaking on common law, since I am taking your course and I'm in that, you know, I'm prepping my exhibits, would I, with that concept of human rights violation, and my body is my property, I believe that's the Fourth Amendment, so I would stand on the Fourth Amendment, my right to privacy or seizure.
They broke a lot of laws, and you mentioned a lot of them. I heard what you said, you know, in
yes.
the contract and stuff, and you could
yeah.
prove all that if you want. I would just mention it so it's in the case.
Yeah, you're going after, well, let me see. This is a teacher's job, and this is a government job or private or what kind of?
The education department is mandating this, so it's the state of New York.
Yeah, but the thing is who's hiring her? Who you're hired by?
Yeah, no, I had been working as a teacher for 15 years in Hawaii. And
okay. And so that's it's not a private school, it's a state school, in other words,
it's
right?
It's a state-run school,
okay.
And the Department of Education.
Oh, okay, yes. Then you, it sounds like you can use your rights in that.
Okay.
You know, but again, you don't necessarily have to really focus in on her rights, but you're really focusing in ultimately you know, the fact that they're trying to force you to take an experimental drug or lose your job. And
right.
I haven't given too much thought about how to approach that. Have you thought about that, Gerard, on how to approach that?
First of all, it's a human rights violation. It's a violation of our Constitution. Right?
Okay.
It's a violation of God's law. You know, it's just such an egregious violation. It's like... Everybody knows you don't pick up a baby and smash it on the ground. Every animal, you know, there's an instinct there. And this is kind of a violation of a fundamental, which should be a basic instinct, that you're going to stick something in somebody that you don't know what it's going to do, could possibly kill them. And then to say that you as a government can mandate it, God didn't give them that kind of power.
Exactly.
You know, they don't have it. So, you know, look at those. The thing is when you talk about Nuremberg and stuff like that, everybody knows them, and they don't want to talk. They hate to talk about that because they have no view it. So I would put it in that way. I mean, they did other things. You can mention them, but that's not going to, you know, you don't want to distract them with a bunch of stuff. This is the one that they're never going to get away from because it's going to come again and again and again. I don't know what they're going to do about it, but they're wrong. They know they're wrong, and they're dead wrong. And everybody knows they're dead wrong. So, you know what I mean? How could you lose?
Okay. So what I'm hearing you say, I want to clarify, what I'm hearing you say is as I start gathering all of my evidence, and I have everything, I have all the memos, that, and I'm going to sue, like John says, don't go after the department. Go after the superintendent who wrote the memos, and the governor who wrote the memos, and focus on the human rights violation according to the Nuremberg Code and experimental use. And
right, and you want to make the point that they stepped outside of their authority, because you're not suing a governor as a governor. Once they step outside of the authority, they've lost any state protection. And we're going to be reading through some information on that. And I think we did do something on that this past Saturday when we were looking at the IRS, and there should be some phrases in there, but there is another case we're going to be talking about, and there's certain phrases that you can use and with Supreme Court decisions and so on this issue. And there's what's called the Brevins case, and there's kind of this problem. I talked about that a little earlier when we started the program. There are other cases that kind of supersede that, and it put certain restrictions on it. The way the other side, the lawyer on the other side, the U.S. attorney, wrote a paper, it's as if it was like null and void. But as I'm reading through the case, it's a lot more complex than that. It's not so cut and dry, and it's not null and void. But there's other things that would make that null and make their position null and void. But I haven't got enough studies on that. But we do have a case and a cut out of the case, which refers to the Bevins case, which means which talks about that. Once they step outside their authority, they lose all protection. Okay. So that case you'd use.
Look, at under Nuremberg, they held people responsible that didn't think they were responsible because they were following orders. These are all the lower minions that tell you, oh, no, you have to do this, you have to do that. Look, at they are responsible for carrying out those illegal orders, basically. They should know, right?
Yes.
Like the guards that shot the prisoners, the unarmed prisoners, they said, we were following orders. They said, that's nice, and they hung them.
Yeah, and remember, the key focus is injury. You know, you're looking for restitution because they injured you and you suffered. And, you know, loss of income, there's all kinds of sufferings that come from that. And so there's a lot you can focus in on. But we're going to be getting into causes of actions. I'm not sure. I think that's chapter 5. Okay. But, you know, if you have to, you can jump ahead and look at causes of action and start reading through them and looking for specific causes of actions concerned that would fit the category of what you're talking about. And I'm sure there are other causes of actions. I mean, I don't think I have all of them. You know, you really, there's all kinds of causes of actions. But you have to, you know, you can Google some. And you'd be surprised how you would find that on Google.
Okay.
Just causes of actions, and you put in keywords or something on what kind of a cause of action you're looking for, and it'll give you the elements to make sure that you cover in order for it to be, you know, stand up in court, because you have to cover certain things. You have to make certain statements, and so, you know, you have to hit every element.
Okay, I like that. Thank you. And I'm taking this course in order to learn and prep as we go along, because, like I mentioned and Gerard mentioned, they won't terminate me as they threatened, because I played their bluff and I stood up against the evil deep state. And so I'm just going along and I'm working at prepping all of my exhibits that I
have.
Did they
lay you off or fire you or anything?
Well, I took sick leave that I had, and then at the end of my sick leave, I had 6 months of sick leave, and then at the end, I called my principal, and I said, oh, I guess you're going to have to terminate me, as the memo said, because I still will not comply, and they wanted me to stick a PCR swab, chemical emergency use swab, up my nose every week.
Yeah, I wouldn't even do that.
I said that exactly. I said, absolutely not. I'm not wearing a mask. So I walked away, and they said, well, oh, we don't know what to do. And so then they put me on unauthorized, unpaid leave, and I rebutted. They gave me a letter, and I sent a notice of rebuttal because it was all lies, and I haven't heard from them since.
You'll have to look to see. You have to calculate your damages. You got to prove your damages, and then you have to find the proper causes of actions to go after them for it, and also. Well, you know, again, we'll be covering that in the course soon. Well, eventually, but we're going to be in pleadings for quite some time. I was just reviewing through some of that stuff, and we've already had our second session on pleadings, and I can see we're going to have at least a couple of more.
Right.
Before
well,
we even leave pleadings.
Yes, and I wanted to just bring this up now so that you're aware that there are, you know, there may be other people in taking this course for the same exact reason that's around these unlawful COVID shots requirements that were all way outside their boundaries. So thank you very much. I appreciate you. And very well.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha. Gerard?
Anyway, that's going to get easier to do as time goes on, because public opinion is going to swing in that way. So.
Okay, I like it.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of it, you know, a lot of these things, first of all, remember, trillions of dollars, not billions, trillions of dollars are going to be seized from these people that are going to be arrested and tried. And we're talking, last I heard, maybe 350,000. What number have you heard as far as indictments are concerned?
That was the high number that I heard.
Yeah. And then also there's a lot of them that haven't been indicted, but will be dealing with the military, will be dealing with them. So the numbers are a lot higher than that. But bear in mind, we're talking about the richest people in the world that are behind all this, and they're going to lose everything that they've got. Remember, as Trump said, you know, if you steal the diamonds from a diamond store and you get caught, you got to give the diamonds back. Well, it's got to come back to the people because that's who they stole it from. So, of course, it would be a wrongdoing for what would the government do with all that money anyway? They got to give it back to the people. So,
They pay my mortgage.
There you go. Well, certain things. You're going to have mortgage forgiveness across the board. I can see that happening. Credit card forgiveness across the board. I can see that happening. Each individual being restored with something because we're all, been injured. Everybody's been injured. We've been injured for all of our lives, really, because we've been restrained and restricted from the potential fruits of our labor that we have. That we couldn't get because everything, you know, we have inflation and you have all kinds of problems. So there's a lot there, and I think they'll, like, let's say, I have a feeling that the dollar bill will be given back in a true dollar form. So if you've got saved, $1,000 somewhere or $10,000 somewhere, I believe they're probably going to restore you dollar for dollar, a real dollar for the phony dollar. Because there's a lot of money to be dealing with here. And then, of course, there's certain issues that are probably categories, and people will sign off on it and get money for that because that's how you pay for the injury is through money. And it's not only the United States, remember. The people around the world have been injured. And so all the money just doesn't come to Americans. And this is a worldwide, plan that's come about through many states or many countries that are working on this problem, and so again, it just doesn't come to Americans. So, it's going to be interesting to see how that's going to work out.
So I have a question. Since I'm still on the mic, if someone was working, I know people that were working for corporations like. Phone companies, Spectrum, Hawaiiantel, etc., and they were actually terminated for reasons.
Yeah, they can sue. Yeah. They've been injured.
And so do they sue do they go directly for the CEO of the company?
Well, with a corporation, you could sue the corporation because the corporation's got money and it's not government. You're not suing the government. When you sue the government, you're suing yourself, so to speak, and plus it's hard to sue the government.
Gotcha.
There are other situations and claims and so on and so forth. But once the individual steps outside of their authority, they're done as far as I'm concerned. And there's plenty to build a case upon that kind of a position or thinking. They'll try to make an argument against that and, they think that they have total amnesty against anything, and nothing could be further from the truth. And so we should have a lot of that in our course, though, the proper claims, statements from the Supreme Court or even in law.
I think she could sue both the corporation and the CEO, depending on what he did and what he knew.
Yeah. You could do that. You could sue the entire board.
That's right. Look, they certainly after a fashion, they should have known. After a couple of months, when the issues were out, they should have known. Anybody that looked into it, and I found out right away that they couldn't do it. And I advised everybody that came to me, I said, don't you dare quit. I said, you hold on.
It does sound interesting that you might want to consider the whole board plus the corporation because, way or the other, you'll get something out of this.
Okay, because, here in Hawaii, we actually were, someone did a FOIA request to the Hawaii Department of Health, and they asked for the white papers on the SARS-CoV-2, and we actually have documentation saying that they have never been able to isolate the SARS-CoV-2. So we actually have this FOIA request from the Department of Health here in Hawaii. So that's ammunition.
Well, they admitted the whole way along. They told us what this was. Everybody just let them go. It's in their own documents.
Yep.
They knew exactly what they were doing. Then they had this event 201 where they said, this is what would happen if there was a pandemic, and this is how we're going to take the rights away, and this way. And they went through everything that they did word for word the year before they hit, it came. It's planned. Everybody knows it's planned. The fact that the lawyers are telling them you can't fire them shows you that the lawyers know, right?
Yep.
So
that's exactly.
Don't tell me the corporation doesn't know.
Yep.
So anyway, it should be an easy suit, and there's going to be a lot of them, and you're going to be one of many fish in the sea. I don't know what they're going to do, because I don't know where all the money's going to come from, but they've robbed a lot of money through the years, these agencies, you know. I mean, I can't believe what the education department goes through. My God, that's a whole nother discussion for a whole nother meeting. But anyway,
and
gotta get moving.
I think, though, a lot of people are going to be using, you know, attorney bar car holders, and they're going to lose, and I'm going to do it.
Well, eventually, look, once we get to the other side, the bar's got to go. They
will not lose, but they will talk them to going into a class action suit, and they won't get anything.
Right.
Now, bar attorneys, they do have certain knowledge of, the procedure and the law, whatever it is that they specialize in, because there's lots of equity out there, lots of laws that apply in different types of cases. And then, of course, there's common law, which is the knowledge that they lack is the common law knowledge. And they can come here to get their common law knowledge. But lawyers should, lawyers have been duped as much as anyone else. But sometimes you deal with a lawyer, and I'm sure they see what you're talking about, but they still continue on the other side of things.
I think a lawyer would think that this is a slam dunk case for him. If I was a lawyer, I'd take it in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, but what I'm trying to say, though, is with lawyers, it's going to be a different story with lawyers once we straighten out the courts,
because
bar attorneys have got to go. They've been banned by our founding fathers. The original 13th Amendment is written for the sole purpose. Look, they even wrote this up in the Constitution itself, but they didn't get the... really, they didn't focus in on the bar attorney themselves, because the bar attorney doesn't have a, let me pull out my Constitution here.
Bar attorney doesn't have what, an oath?
No. The thing is that they are a bar attorney.
A title?
Yeah, a title, right. It's not that they have a title. It's a position of honor. Okay. In other words, if you have a title again, I have to look at the language, because I don't think it's the word title, but let's use the word title for right now.
Well, people say title of nobility, because that's sort of where they're going.
That's the one I was looking for, title of nobility. You see, if you have a title of nobility, then that's inherited. Your children inherit that position, okay? Where a position of honor, and that's where they failed to put that into the Constitution. Somehow they missed that. And they came back in, 1818 or 1816, somewhere in there, with the 13th Amendment, and to add in that position of honor, because a position of honor is a knight, an esquire, and these bar attorneys are considered esquires. So that's not inherited. You know, they don't get that, and their children inherit that title. That's just a condition. It's a position of honor.
I know that I'm going to win that case, because I'm taking a course from you, and I have these Monday night calls, and prepare for war.
That's right. Prepare for war.
Let the games begin. All right, we've got to move on. We really do. Thank you, Cynthia.
Aloha.
Yeah. Aloha.
So next question, it looks like Larry from Arizona. Are you unmuted? You got yourself muted.
No, I see Travis popped up. Travis from South Dakota. Larry's down,
Travis,
another person or two.
Larry.
Well, Travis has been
unmuted.
So.
All right, so go ahead, Travis, and then I'll go back to Larry if he's there. Are you there, Travis? I hear nothing.
Travis from South Dakota, you've been unmuted. Maybe you're muted on your end?
The headphones.
All right, last call for Travis.
I'm going to go back.
Yeah, move on. Just
Larry,
hit the next question or whatever.
For some reason, he didn't.
Well, I'd hit the next question, whoever pops up, because that's the order that should happen.
Okay, well,
This is Larry.
Well, I think I just unmuted Larry from Arizona.
Yeah, you did. Let me mute Travis then. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, this is Larry. How you doing?
Good, good.
Okay, just a couple of things that went through my mind is listening to other people. I think it's great that the IRS is going away, but I had like 30 years experience dealing with tax returns, and the one thing...
Hey, by the way, talking about the IRS, there's a situation. Anybody that's gone to jail through the IRS, they're going to get a big lump sum of money, no doubt, and if they don't make qualifications for that, then the loss, well, they have to, because they're going to be seizing the money, and someone's going to be the government's going to be holding that money, and then you'll be able to go make your claim there. I mean, just think of, you know, someone, they love to give people, you know, when they claim that they're tax evaders and they're criminals and stuff, they love to give 6 years, it seems. Everybody I hear that's gone to jail gone for 6 years. Is that with you, Gerard, too? I know your friend went for 6 years, too.
Anyway, what I was trying to say is that you were mentioning corporations versus doing a business as a DBA.
Mm-hmm.
I had this situation when I was doing tax returns professional where a guy got talked into doing a corporation by some bar attorney, and he was the only employee in his corporation, but then... the state of Nebraska, where it was at, wanted him to pay unemployment tax on him. And I said, well, you're the owner. I says, can you fire you? And it was a big conundrum. So I advised him to dissolve the corporation, which I think he did. But
well, remember, unemployment tax is, voluntary. And you just have to let the people know that coming to work for you that you don't participate in that. And if they don't want to work for you because of that, that's fine, too. But it is voluntary. There's no way that they can force that upon you.
Well, anyway, the other thing I sent an email about it, but I did. I'm a disabled veteran.
Hold on a minute. Let me make a correction on that, because if you are a corporation, they may have some power and authority to force it upon you. If you're a DBA, an individual, they have no power to enforce it upon you. At least that would be my strong assumption. Okay. I have battled those people before, and I found them to be paper tigers. They couldn't do anything. So.
Okay, well, anyway, I was just going to say something about the video about Anarchy USA and the Democratic Party. I tried really hard to go through the video, but some of my PTSD from my military service kind of reared its ugly head, and I had to shut it off. But I would say it's really good and powerful stuff. Everybody should read it that has a strong stomach. Let me just put it that way.
Yeah, also, I did an update on another page, and I don't know if everybody got this, but this is really powerful, especially people who are looking, if I can get my mouse to work, who are looking to understand what's going on with Q and feel more confident. If you go under today's issues and come down to QAnon, Q News Anon, okay, and click on that there, this is the latest one I put up here. Which is Derek Johnson, and he breaks down the CIC, Trump's Mar-a-Lago speech that was given on April 4th. This is extremely powerful, and he goes through, military law and procedures and stuff, and lays it out as Trump is talking about, you know, different issues that he's really referring to. But anyway, pretty powerful if you haven't seen this particular video. And I try to stay just with SGH Anon, only his videos. But there's a couple of videos once in a while. I stick another video in here from someplace else because it just fits. And that is definitely one of them. Anyway.
I didn't quite catch that. I have a little bit of hearing issue.
Yeah, which that? What page and what video?
This is under
today's issues. You come down to Q News Anon, click on that, and this guy, this Anon, his name is SG Anon, and he interprets, you know, a lot of things with Q. He's got, someone that he gets information from that's in the know, and so he gives reports. I don't know if you've been following along, but he's given 47 reports, as a matter of fact, that think he started in the end of August coming in reports. So he's report number 47. And the last couple of reports have been very, very powerful. A lot of things going on. And then Johnson, someone shared this particular video with me, with Derek Johnson, who breaks things down, military things. This guy is a military guy. And he knows the military lore, and he lays that all out. And so I figured, let me stick this up here because this is really powerful. So if anybody hasn't seen that, you're going to want to see that.
Okay. Anyway, I just wanted to say that the truth isn't always pretty, is what I'm trying. What my point was, you know, it's like, but it's necessary for it to come out, and I praise God every day that it's coming out. Hopefully sooner than later, you know. But anyway, that's one thing I like about your organization. You put honor to God. You know, a lot of other organizations want to do a moment of silence, whatever that means. And to me, whoopee.
Yeah, well, if you're going to talk about the common law, you can't get away with talking without talking about God, because the common law comes from Him. So.
Yeah. Anyway, and I do thank you for what you're doing, John, and I will continue to support you, and hopefully I will have my lawsuit ready to go against some people that did a lot of harm to me. But anyway. Oh, one other question that I have about that, and I just like to try to stay as biblical as possible in the way I operate my life. But, you know, yes, we have a right to remedy, but how does that play against, like Jesus said, you know, if someone slaps you in the face, let them slap the other side. If someone takes your cloak, let them take your tunic too, and all that stuff. Can you kind of elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, if you're out preaching the gospel, that definitely, you know, fits for you, you know, specifically. But, you know, we also have a right to defend ourselves, to protect our families, and to protect our own lives. We do have that right. You know, again, you know, if you're going to get into an issue with someone, it's best to walk away. And I think that also is what's being said here. But again, if you have to defend yourself, you have to defend yourself. But if you're preaching the word of God, and you're being persecuted, then it's a different story. It's a different position or a different attitude or a different response to that, should I say. At least that's how I see it.
Okay. Thank you. I yield.
Hey, Larry, what was that movie you said you watched? Did you get it off of this our site, or can you repeat that?
Well, on your site, the first video that was, I guess it was posted on Rumble, but it was like...
Yeah, it's Anarchy. It's under today's issue. I put a special page up on this. It's called Anarchy USA. And this was a documentary done by Griffin. And he did this back in the 60s, I think, maybe late 60s. Let me think about this. No, it was before. Yeah, it was probably mid-60s to late 60s in that area when a lot of the riots were going on. But it's all about how they operated to move all these different countries into communistic countries. And they were working, you know, through Europe and all the way through and even to the United States. And that's what this is about. It's very powerful. Well, so, I don't, have you seen it, Gerard? You didn't see this Griffin's documentary?
I probably saw it a long time ago. I should watch it again.
Oh, you got to watch it.
Being that it's happening right in front of us now.
Well, not only that, this whole page, check it out. Some of these videos I know you did see, like the, you know, this one here, Slavery in America and Our Founding Fathers, you've probably seen that one.
Yeah.
This one here is, this came down in 2020. I just found out about it. I never seen this before. This is an unbelievable documentary, very powerful, eye-opener, no doubt, especially for black people. They really need to see this. This is a video done by, well, actually by white and black people worked on this together. And they laid out a lot of things that I've already discovered in history also. They laid out the fact on how the Democratic Party was really keeping them sort of on the plantation, so to speak, is the kind of the quote that they mentioned, and total control and how they did it. And it's just an eye-opening thing. Underneath that, there's another one, Uncle Tom 2, and this I only got halfway through it and finished that one. But then this guy here, I don't remember his name. This guy here has done a couple of videos. He's done a lot of videos I thought were powerful. These two I threw up here, communism in our universities, and how those who require tolerance from us, they're not very tolerable of us. You know, they're demanding. This one here, this is a two-hour one done by Griffin, also More Deadly Than War. This I had seen a long time ago, and we do have it on a website and other places. We may have it in a course. But this is a really powerful video. All these videos are powerful. That's all I can tell you. Extremely powerful. And here, you and I spoke about this one here before. I know you've seen this. Mm-hmm. This is that KGB training guy. He came off the plane in the 70s and said, "You guys are already being taken over. Communism is in full force already."
I think he's dead now, John. But
is he?
I think so. Yeah, I
Well, he was pretty elderly here, and you can look at Edward Griffin, and this is in the 70s, so yeah, he'd probably be 90 or 100 years old by now.
Yeah, no, he died earlier. He didn't live much longer after this, I don't think, but...
And then I threw Norman Dodd in there. That's maybe the one you're thinking of, with the hidden agenda, with the trusts, and...
I know that one.
Yeah, Norman Dodd. This one here I threw in here because it solidifies the economic side of things and how they paid for all this and how they changed the history. So this really kind of fit in here also. So.
But look, at that guy was an ex-KGB.
Yeah, KGB agent.
Yeah, yep. and he came over. So that definitely wasn't, what's his name? Norman Dodd. You know.
No, that's a different guy. I forget his name. So.
But anyway, I'm saying if he was saying how the communists were controlling things way back then.
Yeah, well, he said when he got off the plane in America and he was over here on doing KGB business, and he says, "Wow, America is already well set forward for the what has kept us from falling is the Bill of Rights. That is the thing that has really kept us. Without the Bill of Rights, would have been done."
All right. So anyway, we better get to the next one here.
Can you say one more thing real quick?
Yeah.
Okay, I've done some research on people who willingly go along with trying to bring about communism in countries, and a lot of they think that they're going to be on top when it's all said and done, but oftentimes the people who bring the communism forward those people because, you know, they can't trust them.
Right. They betrayed their own people, so they feel they're going to betray them, too. You're right. That guy makes that point, doesn't he?
That's a given. Yes. That's a given.
This KGB agent, I think, makes that point.
That's how communism comes in, and then it kills all those that facilitated them getting in because they know they don't want them around. You know what I mean? You know, you betrayed your own countrymen. What are you going to do with us when you get tired of us? So, yeah, it's like a given that they kill those people, and they're usually on the higher education scale too, like the professors and everybody they're using today to subvert our country.
Right.
But anyway, I digress. Okay, are we done, Larry?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I'm gonna. I think this should be. Travis, it says it's Larry, so I'm going to hit it again.
Well, no, hold on. You got two people because you jumped up. Let me mute Larry, and now you got Aloha.
Aloha.
There you go.
Hey, guys. I know it's really late there. It's not even 5 yet here, 5 p.m. But that does mean that when class starts on Saturday mornings, we're up at 6 a.m. So,
wow.
Anyway, I wanted to ask you, what do you have any methods that you use to help facilitate finding someone that you want to serve? For example, maybe it's someone that did work for the government but no longer is working for the government, but they are part of the suit that you want to file and you want to file against them individually in their capacity, like you said, not in their government.
Yeah, you want them. You sue them for stepping outside of their authority.
She's saying she can't find them because they're not around.
Well, that's tough then. I don't know what to tell you on that one. You know, you, if they're an agent, for instance, and there's an address for that agent, and it's got a name which is probably not their real name anyway, you sue that that name at that address, and they'll respond. One of the things they're trying to throw a case out that I got going right now on is because it didn't serve the U.S. attorney. Now, I never knew that you, when you sue someone that works for the government on the federal level, you have to serve it upon the U.S. attorney, and or at least serve them a copy, shall I say. So they're trying to throw us out of court for that. But they can't. They're not going to. Well, the judge may do it, but we got a good argument against that. So if you're going to serve someone in the federal government, again, they may not have a real name, the name that they gave you, that's what you sue them under. You send it to the address where the office they would have been working out of, but make sure you also send a copy to the U.S. attorney in the district. For instance, for me, it's the Southern District of New York, so I'd have to serve it down there in the Southern District of New York.
Wait, you're saying if you were to serve like a prosecutor, you would
anybody working. Well, I, as far as my concern, suing anyone, it's always the IRS. So, you know,
okay.
And they claim that that's a government agency, and it's not. But in any event, and that might be debatable because I fell upon some information about mid-1800s with the IRS, but I'm looking into that, and I don't know what that was all about. But I'm not aware of any legislation that's empowered an agency called the IRS, and the IRS is incorporated in one in Guam and the other in the Philippines. And so one's a cap IRS, and the other one is a lowercase IRS, and it's a game they play.
So, okay, so to clarify, for example, are you saying that if it's a federal position, you would have to give a copy to the U.S. attorney, whoever?
You'll serve the people, finding them through the addresses that they had on their card, or if it's an agent that came out, or something through the mail, you know, someone badgering you through the mail. You'd serve it upon that name at that address to the individual, not the government, the individual. But you're going to want to serve a copy to the U.S. attorney. And, I mean, a non-bar attorney wouldn't know that, you know. I mean, you can be studying and be a lawyer, but if you're not a bar attorney and you're just studying on your own, you may not know that because it's kind of buried.
Are you saying if it's a federal, someone working for the federal government, then you also serve a copy to the U.S. attorney? And if
yes.
It's someone working for the state, then you would serve it to the attorney general? Or
No. Just sue the person. My understanding, it's only the federal government. So they want you to serve a copy onto the U.S. attorney.
Okay,
yeah,
so
not at the state level.
Okay. You always do, you send a copy to the U.S. attorney. So, for example,
right.
If it's a cop, that would be someone working for the county, but you would, they're still federal employees.
No,
then
you go directly for them. No, only a person that is in federal government. You have to serve a copy to the U.S. attorney. Remember, there's only one U.S. attorney in each district, okay? And then there's the assistant U.S. attorneys. They work underneath. It's like the sheriff and the deputies, the same thing. There's one for every district. So you got the one main U.S. attorney who has a whole bunch of attorneys working for him, and they're all assistant U.S. attorneys. But you just go serve it to the office wherever that's at. And they have an office, for instance, in the Southern District, they have an office down in Manhattan, and they also have an office in White Plains, Westchester County, which is a little further north, but that's considered, both of them is considered Southern District. But there's an office for a U.S. attorney in both places. Wherever there's a courthouse, there's also an office for the U.S. attorney.
Okay, yeah, that part I understand. I guess I'm just a little confused. So a prosecutor, if this is like a county, like someone working as a prosecutor in this specific county, would they also be under that umbrella of the U.S. attorney?
No. Any other government agent, you know, any state, county, just serve the individuals directly. You don't have to, serve a notice to anyone else.
Okay,
not to my knowledge, anyway. It could be something hidden that I don't know about, but not to my knowledge. Yeah, Gerard.
Okay, you don't know any agent.
Serve it to his name and the office that you last had contact with him in.
Correct.
Okay. And so, for example, like the cop that just completely mishandled the situation with me, what they did was they just kind of let him go, but they didn't say why. And of course, I keep saying, I want the body cam footage. And they won't give it to me. And that's a whole other story. But my point is that he has now magically disappeared. You know, as opposed to like, no. I actually want him subpoenaed. Let's get him on the stand. But of course, he's gone. So I don't know what you can do in order to find someone, since obviously they don't want him accessible anymore because of what would come out if the body cam came out, or if he was actually on a witness stand, and actually had to answer for what he
happened. They got multiple problems here because they are responsible for him in a certain sense because
he'd go to his boss.
If he breached the law, that's a lawsuit to their insurance company. They have insurance for that. I mean, besides suing him personally, you know, they got to cover their butt too.
You can also try, serving him through his last place of employment, which would have been as a police officer or wherever it was that he was working. And if you do that, you know, I always go for their boss. For instance, I've sued IRS agents. As a matter of fact, I'm doing one right now for someone and would sue an IRS agent. But we're also suing I think it's called the commissioner. And because he's the top dog, he's the responsible one. He should know what's going on. And ultimately, it turns out he's following his directions anyway. So they both have broken the law.
Okay. And so that was kind of my next question in regard, you know, relation to this was, would I then serve the chief of police? Because he's the one that allowed this to go on. This has went on for over a year.
Right.
So it's like any point he could have.
Is that the highest? Is this a city? What is it, city police or something? Or a town police? What is it?
County.
County police?
It's a sheriff.
Yeah.
Is it a sheriff?
Oh, it's a sheriff?
Don't forget, I'm in Hawaii. We don't have those.
That's right. Yeah, right. That's right. Okay.
Well, it's the equivalent of the sheriff. How's that?
Well, no, I don't think so. They do have a sheriff's office out there. They're just not elected, right?
Yeah, statutory.
Well,
whatever.
Like I said, I do know that they have, you know, they have sheriff vans and they take prisoners here and there into the courthouses. And I don't know if they do the warrants like you're talking about. I've not, you know, had any experience with that. But in terms of them being elected, I know that is not the case, and that they just pretty much do the bidding of the government already in place. That
of course, yes.
Not
they're lackeys of the court, basically.
Yeah, they owe their job to them. They could get fired if they don't obey.
Right.
Absolutely, yes. That's
but,
all they are.
But who are you suing? Are you suing the police department? An individual. You're not suing someone from the sheriff's office. You're suing someone from the police department, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so it has nothing to do with the sheriff. So what's the top dog there? Is it the chief of police that's in head of the whole thing? There's nothing higher than that? Is there a commissioner involved somewhere? Do you know? See, that's
not
what you want to look for.
Huh? I think for the county, highest is the chief.
Okay, then
that's
the guy you go for. That's the boss. He's the one responsible for everything, and he's the one that teaches and puts forward the memos for this, that, or the other thing, or whatever. Everything comes down from that office. Procedure, policy, everything comes down from there. So you can sue that individual, any other individual, do a care of, because he's not there no more, and then get the, at least you'll have the chief of police, you know, that's going to have to show up in court.
Okay, so the chief of police that's now in is didn't really have anything to do with that specific situation. So I could even kind of sue him in the sense of just like, and then do care of these other people because he's now the one in charge that he could then find those people. And he might be able to say, I had nothing to do with this, but he could get those other people because obviously he'd have their forwarding addresses.
But you're saying it's a different chief of police too?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Now, yeah. Gone
wow.
Two
okay.
Or three
that's a little complex. So, I mean, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, but if she serves it to him, it's his duty to get it to that guy or best he can.
Yeah.
But, you know, unless they've lost contact completely with him, which is not usually the case.
Yeah, that makes
sense.
Yeah,
I would like the chief of police could find the last chief of police. And if he
can't,
we got a problem.
I mean, if they tell you we don't know where he is and we can't find him, that could be that they don't want to find him. You know what I mean?
especially since they caught him on video in a hit and run. That's why he was taken out as the chief of police. He was caught at the mall. He knocked over somebody's motorcycle and they took off and didn't, like, you know, leave a note or anything. But
that may be a problem here because the guy's probably broke to begin with, and they may just try to build a case. Hey, you know, it has nothing to do with us. So I don't know. That this is a little complex on that. And I'm not sure how that's going to go.
Okay. Well, it's going down that road of just curious if you guys have some agency or something that you use online to help do some kind of people search to find people, because there's just a handful of people. I've got like 50 people in this conspiracy against rights. So it is pretty complex. But there's just maybe a handful of people where I don't quite know where to find them. And part of that is because one of them is a witness, and for over a year and a half, the prosecutor has been subpoenaing him at an address where the landlord admitted a year and a half ago in testimony that he doesn't live there anymore. So we know already the prosecutor can't even find his witnesses, two of them, which one of them is a complaining witness. Yeah. So the whole thing's a joke. You know, like, these people don't even think they even have to cover their tracks. But anyway, the point that I'm making is that, like, I want these witnesses, you know, like, I'm like, go get them, go find him. And of course I've acknowledged that to my court appointed attorney. And I said, go get these witnesses, go get their real addresses. And he completely ignores me because he says to me, they're not going to take this to trial. So he's admitted that the state kind of goes, oh yeah, we don't want this. We don't actually want to have to defend this. So we're just going to not do anything about it at all. We're not going to give her a trial. So I'm just going to do my part. And like you said, become the plaintiff. But my point was, it's like, oh, I wonder how I find these people, since even they are either pretending that they don't know where they are, or, you know, they just don't even care because they know they're not.
Couldn't the judge put an order and kind of help her, John, to that guy?
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, they're not going to help find anyone. I would sue them through the office that they work at and see where it goes. And
yeah, because that might be attached.
I don't know any other way, so. But we have to move on because we've got other people. It's 11 o'clock. But it's a tough one. You know, you're going to have to hit and miss on this one.
Okay. And sorry, but you were saying I should do what? The very last thing you said? Do it through what?
Go through the office where they worked last, you know, and that's where you serve it on there. And, care of that office. And then go for the commissioner also. No, not the commissioner. Chief of police, I guess it was.
Right.
Again, care of. And... care of the chief of police that's there now, I guess, you know?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, a couple of them are at least through the police department, so that should be easier. So, like, one of them is just a lone citizen that I'm like...
It's going to be a hard case, I think, to get money out of. To find them and then get money out of them is going to be hard because they're not going to have the kind of money you'd be looking for restitution for. And I don't know, you know, because they're not working there anymore, you know, and you're not suing, then you're going to have to sue the department, and that becomes suing City Hall, so to speak, and that's difficult.
Well, I'm not so worried about that because I got three judges, and I got them nailed to the wall. So in terms of bonds, I'm not worried about not being able to get money. I just want every single person that could have stopped this that didn't, I want them all held accountable. And I want them to have to actually get a stand and answer for why they took an oath the way they did, and then they didn't uphold it.
Okay, well, with that, we've got to move on. So
my assessment of your situation is that they got more worries than you, and you just better hope somebody doesn't get there before you. But these guys, they got a lot of people coming after them. So I'm just saying, they might be gone before your thing gets in there.
Oh, yeah. No.
Especially if they've done a lot of stuff. So I'm saying,
right.
Yeah. Not have to worry about it. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You might not be able to worry about it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, who do we have here?
Well, this is Larry again. I didn't really ask for another question, but...
All right. I got to go.
Yeah, that's because you went out of order. That's why I always just hit the next button and just whatever order they give me, you take. So, but anyway.
Hi, John. Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, how you doing, Will?
Yeah, hey, great. So this will be quick. I need to be repointed on two points from the course last Saturday. Number one, you mentioned about the IRS seizing or sending instructions to the bank to seize funds. So I'm wondering, how does the IRS instruct the bank to receive funds? And also, is this accompanied by a notice to an affected person from the IRS? That's one.
Well, they do it through the mail. It's a notice of lien. It's mailed to the bank. The bank waits 7 days. Notification should be made by the bank to you that there is a lien being placed on your account. And you have 7 days to respond to that. And if you deny the bank's allowing access, they claim that they can't transfer the money. But that doesn't mean that they can't lock your account, so that becomes another problem. You may have to sue for that to get your money that's still in the bank. The problem is this, is they come in with what's called a notice of lien. And the reason why they do a notice of lien is because they don't have a lien. And they have to file it in the county clerk, and they don't do that either. They'll file a notice of lien with the county clerk. And the county clerk has been taking the notice of liens as if it's a lien, an actual lien, which is turned into really a warrant, okay, to seize property. So there is no warrant. Also, the other thing is once they went through the mail and they committed a crime, the whole thing's fraud. Now it's fraud through the mail, and that's a big deal because they made that a big deal some years back against people.
Right.
So that becomes a bigger crime for them. The other crime is that the only one that can seize your property is a sheriff. And, of course, that creates a problem with a place where there are no sheriffs. And they've made sheriffs sort of water boys at this point. They even go around sheriffs in many places. Thank God in New York they still go through, they go through the sheriff to make the servings. I don't know what they do with the seven counties who don't have sheriffs, although they do, but they're not elected, so maybe they still use the sheriff's office for seizing property and different things, too, still. I don't know.
Okay.
But it's unlawful there because they don't take a direct oath and being hired directly by the people. They owe their job to whoever hired them. Whoever hired them can fire them. It should be the people, but it's not. So therefore, that's another problem for those areas.
Right. Okay. I won't go down the rabbit hole here. And then the second, because, to serve time, I'll save it for next Monday. But you also mentioned in the course, and I couldn't find it in one of your PowerPoints, but you talked about the restitution phrase with regard to what, you wanted to get. Is it the wherefore?
At the end of your paper, you have what's called the wherefore clause, which states exactly the details. We're going to be covering that the next course, but in the next session, by the way, because I'm going to further, talk.
Well, you talked about the Morgan dollars and the tenfold,
right,
because it's
right.
Biblical, and I was trying to find it over the last couple of days, and for some reason, I couldn't connect with where it was in one of your presentations, so I was just wondering if you could point that to me. Or
yeah, okay, well, it's under education, starts here. You get over to the table of contents page. You probably know where that's at.
Yep.
And what are we looking for now?
Oh, where you talked about the restitution, and you enumerated into Morgan dollars.
Okay, so what we covered this past week, well, first of all, we covered last week is this. Are you seeing this on my desktop?
Yes, sir.
Okay. This here, pleadings opening a court of record, that this information is what was on the PowerPoint. So I have it, and I did it in a PDF also, just to help people out to breeze through that if they want instead of going through the PowerPoint. Then there's the anatomy of an action, which I actually just posted this up because I want to dig a little deeper and talk a little more about this, how the action is put together. We looked at index, no form, RJI, the seal.
Yep.
We looked at a file and demand. We looked at the cover sheet. We looked at the summons. Now, the action at law and the IRS action at law is probably where you're looking, which is right here, number 2, 02.
Okay.
That's probably what you're looking for. We'll be picking up this week, coming up, looking into the anatomy of an action. And then we're going to be looking at memorandum support of the action. And we're going to be looking at affidavits and so on.
Right. Well, thank you. Yeah, I asked the question on Saturday about seal, and you answered that one. So thank you. I was having difficulty finding that language. I thought it was pretty interesting. So I'll go dark now and let someone else ask the questions. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Gerard? Yep. Last caller coming up.
Can you click it for me? I'm going to just wait for a second. I can't get
back. Yeah, let me click the next person. Okay. Brett, you got the mic. Go right ahead. What state are you from, Brett? I know we spoke before, but don't remember the state.
I'm sorry, can you hear me?
We can hear you. What state are you in?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, okay.
Yeah, so my question is how would you handle a situation where someone reports, does a call on you to Child Protective Services?
Mm-hmm.
And then, but they're calling from a different state to the state where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
So is there?
Well, that becomes a problem because it's hard for a person in one state to sue another person in another state. I think you have to do that in federal court, and that creates another problem because, again, you know, what's the jurisdiction? You can open a court of record and hope that they proceed according to a court of record. You know, they'll proceed according to the civil law as if it's a court of record, though. And but again, you have to do that in a federal court.
But they're calling in a CPS on them so that they.
Yeah, but he's talking about how who or where to sue, I guess, right?
Yeah, well.
Yeah, the thing is this with CPS. Here's the thing with CPS. When someone makes a report and they come down to do an interview and an investigation, you know, don't let them in your house. Tell them you're not going to talk to them. Don't talk to these people. If you talk to them, you know, nice people that have nothing to hide will talk to them, generally speaking, and those are the people that get beat up and burnt. I've known of situations where there definitely is abuse, and they'll throw them right out of their house, and they'll slam the door in their face, and they just can't get in there to do an investigation. So, you know, that's, I wouldn't deal with these people. Very dangerous. Very dangerous. They tried to take my children when they were very young, and I didn't have any knowledge of the courts. And my son got injured. He fell down steps because one of the other kids in the house, and I was visiting, so I didn't even live there. And boy, all kinds of people came, and the CPS got involved, and all kinds of craziness. And it took a year to go through that whole process. They didn't take my children, but they sure did try. Big mistake is allowing those people to talk to those people, you know.
So I
wasn't there at the time. My wife was there, and they let the people in, and they talked, and the people who lived in that house, and that was the big mistake.
So
I had them come here once. I could tell you about that story.
So they can't force you to speak with them or interact with them in any type.
Well, they could, but, you know, get a warrant.
Yeah, there you go.
That's the only thing they can do. I had somebody that made a report to CPS. It was a setup. It was a kid. It was a stupid kid thing, and this is how stuff goes. So there was a girl that was mad at my daughter, and so she said something in front of a teacher because they know that teachers are mandatory reports. You know, they hear something, they have to report it. So she went in front of the teacher, saying that I was doing something to my daughter illegal. You know, I mean, I was abusing my daughter, knowing that she didn't even have to call. The teacher was going to call. That's how smart these kids are, right? So my daughter knew that she had done it because she said, oh, you're going to get a visit. And my daughter got all upset and ran out of class, wouldn't go back for the teacher, and they called me. And I didn't know what was going on. I said, look, whatever you got to do, do. Anyway, the long and the short of it is, turns out that this little girl was, you know, did it to get my daughter because she said she stuffed her bra or some stupid childish thing, you know. So they came and they wanted to come in. And I said, you're not coming in. Well, we want to see, you know, where it is and this and that. And I said, no. I said, because I can't have you coming in and finding a Cracker Jacks under the stove and saying that we're unkept. Oh, no, we don't do that. I said, I don't care. Either you get a cop here and make a charge or leave. And then I said, and who's the girl? I said, I already know who the girl is because my daughter told me. I said, so it's not anonymous. They said, we can't tell you. I said, well, it's a false report. and that girl's mother's responsible for her, and you have to tell me if I subpoena it, because I want to sue her. And if you're going to protect her, I'm going to sue you for protecting her and making, doing an illegal action, a false report. You ruin people's lives. You get people shot and killed that way, you know? It's not a slight thing. So they started getting nervous when I talked back to them like that, and they did not come in, you know? And I told them, I said, well, what's going to happen? Well, we're going to put a paper in that if it goes 6 months with nothing, we'll throw it out. I said, no. I said, I don't want a paper in there. I'm going to make sure that it's not in there, because this is a false report, and I know it is. And so if I have to sue you, I will. You know what I mean? So anyway, they didn't push the issue. I never checked to see if the paper was in there or not, but they never came back, you know. But you're better to stand firm with them, because the minute you stand there and wring your hands, they smell blood. And they are, I hate to tell you this, but they are the premier child trafficking agency in America.
Absolutely.
A lot of kids are ending up in traffic situations, you know what I mean? They're being sold. And for everything, organs, everything, and the worst stuff you can imagine. So that's where we are as a nation right now, and this is what's falling down around us. And this is why, you know, God won't give us blessings of liberty because of this. But anyway, you just want to be firm with them, you know. Especially, you know, if you know there's nothing wrong and you got nothing to hide, you just stand your ground.
But they would need to get a warrant to.
That's the only way they can come into your home.
In other words,
anything.
If they got enough evidence that the DA thinks that he can bring charges, then have at it, buddy. You know what I mean? You know it's crap. I mean, I wouldn't want to get involved with it. Like John said, they're dangerous people. You don't want to get involved with them. But if they're at your doorstep, now you are involved with them.
And that's one time. That's one time. If they did get a warrant to come in, that's one time I would call and hire a bar attorney.
Well, right.
You know, and also, you know, also if you're going into court for the first time, and you're still learning, and you're kind of leery here or there, you can hire a lawyer. I wouldn't bring them into the court though. Leave them outside the court. But, you know, you can run your paperwork through them. I mean, they're not going to like the way you write it up, because you're going to be writing it up according to the common law. But they can give you some ideas and thoughts and what they think about your paperwork and how procedure. I try to keep my paperwork as much as procedural as possible. Until it violates the common law, you know, I kind of just follow along. And it's pretty logical. Most of the procedures and everything they got going anyway, it's the way it's always been anyway. It's the same procedures through the common law that goes into all these courts. So, you know, but just things that are repugnant to the common law is what I would shy away from. Otherwise, I make my paperwork look just like theirs to a major degree.
So if they reach out and they leave a message, is there an obligation to return their phone call?
Well, I don't know that there's an obligation. It depends on what stage you're at. I mean, who is this, CPS?
Yeah, it's just following up on.
Look, they have no evidence, okay, and they have nothing. Don't let them into your home. It's that simple. They were coming out to investigate, to get something on you, to write a report, and then execute that report. That's when they can bring the sheriff in and potentially take your children and do all kinds of crazy, stupid stuff. That's very dangerous. Now, the other way around that is for them to, they'd have to go to the person that makes the complaint. And in the case of school and stuff, it's usually another child, so there's really no adult there, so they can't get an affidavit per se. They can get a report, but it's not an affidavit, so no judge can act on anything without an affidavit. So you got to get someone that's not hearsay and someone that's not a child to make the report. It's a difficult thing for them to do. But they'll get everything they need. Once they get into your house, they will get everything they need to take their children away if that's what they're intending to do. And generally speaking, that's what they love to do. I don't know what it is. These people are dangerous.
Yeah. All right.
Listen,
okay.
If they call and leave a message and they want you to call back, what I would do in that case, instead of not calling because then they might come out,
right?
I would call and I would talk to somebody and say, what's this about? And then I would say, well, I've been advised by my attorney not to say anything. So if you want to talk, you know, send me it in writing, and I'll run it by my attorney. Usually that's all they need to hear. If they don't have anything, they won't mess with you. You know what I mean? Because like John says, even an attorney can sue them for getting over their bounds, so to speak, you know? And a bar attorney would know how to do that real good because he knows the statutes, you know? I mean, John, you've had some good advice from attorneys that you've actually followed. Well, yeah. Did I just hear the earthquake? No, but especially they may know a procedure better than you or a statute that's going to help.
So we learned most of our procedures. We learned from a lawyer, bar attorney.
That's right. Yeah, that's true. So anyway, that's the best advice we can give you, probably more than we should have given you. I'm not giving legal advice. This is my opinion, and this is for entertainment purposes.
Yeah, but, you know, you can give legal advice. There's really not much they can really do to you because we're under common law. We're not giving legal advice under civil law. See, that's where they get you. When they say you can't come in here and practice law, they're ultimately talking about civil law to begin with. But even with that, the people don't understand that they can get through that barrier anyway. But the thing is you need to understand what's really going on here. It's a civil law thing. We're not participating in civil law. You know, our jurisdiction is common law. It's the law of the land. So, and they've already claimed to have abrogated it, and people believe it, and that's it. You know, yeah. I've had lawyers say, oh, no, the common law has been abrogated. I mean, that's how dumb they are to not realize they can't abrogate it.
And the seal that you were speaking about in the course, it said New York. We just changed that to whatever state we're in.
Yeah, your state, your birth date. You can use another date if you want. You can use 1776 if you want, you know. You can use your birth date. Well, your personal seal, I use my birth date on it. That's what I use. And, of course, I'm in New York, so it's New York. So you do the same thing. The rest of the words really is common law by the grace of God. Or natural law by the grace of God. That's what what language is that in? It's
Latin.
Thank you, Latin.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you both.
Yeah. Anyway, with that. Oh.
You dropped your mic?
Yeah, I'm here.
With that, you dropped your mic.
My screen went off. Anyway, we're going to say goodnight. Thank you, everybody, and we'll see you here next week.
Oh, what's that?
I've been learning.